theme music seems more appropriate all the time. It's going to be a very difficult year, and I do hope most all of you, wherever you live, have made some kind of preparations to survive major interruptions in services and life as we knew it, while the planet is being terribly reformatted. As I was told, some of you may remember, 6 years ago, that things were going to be never the same, and to get ready and prepare. And those words were 100% correct and accurate. So here we are at the beginning of the year. And by the way, it's going to be, I think in February, we start our fourth year. I think we start our fourth year in early February, in about a month. Isn't that right?
I think you're right, yeah.
Seems like only yesterday.
It does.
Right? We've been married and divorced twice already, and still at it. Trying to bring reality out of the shadows, and fourth year of service. So that's a good thing. The bad thing is, we just can't, and no one wishes more than Erica and I that we could really present some things that are hopeful and optimistic, and there may be a way to take something and reverse these terrible damages. Nothing yet. We're looking, and you'll be the first to know if we have anything that would suggest that. We have seen now, over these 3 years, overwhelming evidence that they, the creators of this, whoever they are, clearly factored in shedding as a method of getting the vax refusers. We know this. We've got endless stories we presented here of people who have been around the vaxxed and who have they've been tagged, and they're suffering, and some apparently are showing sludge blood even though they've never been injected. So the transmission issue is critical, and we've urged you to follow along with those horrible, depraved almost conditions they wanted us all to follow. 6 feet away. Well, actually, it ought to be like 10 or 12, but that one works. Masks absolutely will help you. They will help you, and that's as far as we should go with it. But do not go out without a mask around other people. And there are many other things here. But to sum it all up briefly, and we've made this statement many times, the diabolical nature of the injections, and both the vax and the virus are bioweapons. Remember that. The biological nature of the incredible panorama of methods of taking someone's health into the toilet and killing them is astounding. This thing has so many tentacles and tendrils and threads that go out into different parts of the biophysiology of the body and destroy it. It's not funny. This thing is really put together. It's the ultimate bioweapon. I can't imagine anything more clever. People have, I took that 2 years ago. What do you mean? So the manufacturers, as long as they're still around, they're going to go bankrupt at some point when people file enough lawsuits. But they have plausible deniability, the game. And when you own the media, and the media is owned by the same people behind the bioweapons, you get the picture. Not a good one.
Yeah, I agree. And it really amazes me that so few people see what's actually happening.
Sad. Is it denial, or that they're just tired, don't want to entertain it? They're certainly not well informed. They have been confused by the alt news world, especially of if everything from hydras to graphene oxide and all the other crap that's been pushed out there. So I don't, nicotine patches will cure everything, or virtually everything. No. And I don't begrudge anybody when they say, I just can't deal with it. I get it. They've been beaten up, pounded.
Well, and there's a lot of liars. out there. Intentionally so. They're certainly in the alt news. The major alt news platforms are littered with them. And then the green screeners, you know, just pick up the narrative and amplify it. And the social media groups have various types of shills and trolls put in there to control the narrative. And I think a lot of people just end up throwing up their hands and just giving up. You know, whatever's going to be is going to be.
That was part of the tactic. Nope. That was the plan. Beat them up with false media, fake media. And you look at so many of these sites, and after a while, it's quite clear that they've all been penetrated, and there are shills or Confederates acting in those groups to post material that the controllers benefit by having posted. I'll be real nice, and yeah, they're there.
They are, and no, it is. It's tedious at this point to have to keep debunking it, addressing it.
Well, we do our best, and I know that many of you do listen carefully and try to employ some of the things that we say, and there's no, and I'll say this again, there's no more well-informed person in this field that I can imagine out there other than Erica. She,
oh,
I don't
no,
think.
No, no, that, you're, no, that's.
No. No, no, you do, no, from a non-deep-seated, hardcore institutional scientific basis, where we are in the alt news world perspective, there's nobody that knows more than you. Nobody. No. Nobody researches like you do.
No, I just keep a broad perspective, and I look for, I don't know, well, first observation, you know, what's in the literature, what's being researched and can withstand peer review, or scrutiny, at least, and doesn't match up to what we're seeing clinically.
And a lot doesn't. One of the most recent things that you told me last week, or maybe a little longer, but this goes back to 2021, when people first started to talk about COVID long haulers. They'd get the bioweapon virus, and then they'd get better, but they didn't shake all of their symptomology. They had bad symptoms. They were sickly. They were tired. They were whatever. There's a whole basket full of things. We called them long haulers. They could have just as equally been vax-injured long haulers. And I think that was part of the game that they kept away from us. They wanted us to think it was just from being infected with a virus, but it wasn't. There was another factor as well, and that was called the injection. So, but the long haul, tell us what's going on with the original group or wave of long haulers.
Well, now these are the people that contracted the virus back in 2019, 2020, before the vax rollout, well before the vax rollout. And they were the unfortunate ones that got quite sick with it and never truly recovered from it, had lingering symptoms, whether they be immune-related, immune suppression, immune deficiency, cardiovascular issues, neurological issues, and try as they may, no treatment has been able to restore them to full functioning. And many of them now are clearly headed for an early grave. They have neurological conditions that are not considered curable. You know, they're ALS-like symptoms, Alzheimer's-like symptoms, but they don't fit the classic definition. But they are truly on a downward spiral, and some of them are young. You know, I mentioned there's an increase in that diagnosis of MOG, M-O-G, antibody disease, which is myelin oligodendrocyte glycoprotein, and that's a protein that's on the surface of nerve cells, and for whatever reason, the body's been tricked into making antibodies and destroying that protein. Well, you can imagine the long list of symptoms that come with that, not the least of which is transverse myelitis, where you're paralyzed, essentially.
Not good.
Neurological disease is rampant, and it's debatable what exactly is causing that. It could be the immune system attacking various proteins in the nervous system provoked by the presence of the spike protein. No doubt that depriving nerves of an oxygen supply is also quite damaging. And then just inflammation in general.
The cells in the nervous system, the neurological cells, there are cells in there. Now, do we know that they
neurons.
Have... neuron cells. Do we know if they have ACE2 or any of the others that the spike happens to like to dock onto?
No, they have other ones, though, like neuropilin. And then nicotinic acetylcholine receptor.
Mm-hmm. Point is, the spike takes up residence in your nerves, your nerve pathways.
Yeah, it does. It has a couple different ways of attaching to nerves and probably even entering nerves.
Right.
And, you know, once it gets inside a nerve cell, it's probably not coming out.
No. And so when it's inside of a cell or outside of a cell and attached to a cell or wherever it is, it's going to attract artillery, your immune system firepower. And it's like, sadly, calling in artillery on top of yourself, because the cell involved with the spike is going to get, first of all, ruined by the spike, and therefore a prime candidate for dissolution and degradation and removal by the lymphocytes. So they're going to come where the spike is and start doing the real damage. So our immune system is being tricked, we've said this many times, into destroying the human body. That's what it's doing. And it's we've seen the Arne Burkhardt pictures of the heart muscle, this nice, beautiful, striated muscle, is now all full of scar tissue and full of lymphocytes in there, killing cells, killing heart cells, which are not going to be replaced. And we'll get to more on the heart a little bit later. But this is crazy. But back to the shedding thing. We just had holidays. We had Thanksgiving. We had Christmas. We had New Year's. We had a lot of people, obviously in mixed company. And one can only hope that people got lucky and didn't get hit, because shedding is more than real. And if you remember how it wasn't even talked about in the beginning, we talked about it way in the beginning, but they didn't want to go there, so they didn't, and they held it out. But now it's here, and now they're even admitting, the mainstreamers, those who talk about it, that shedding is a problem. So, yeah, and the government wants people mingling. Just remember that. They want you to be together with your vax opposites. They want that. And we've got a perfect demonstration of somebody who has been, in my opinion, a long time Intel or government asset, we'll call him. And he's Dr. Mark Siegel on Fox. And he gives, you know, he looks like a nice grandfatherly figure, and he gives nice medical advice to people. But he's now pushing shedding. That's what we think. By virtue of the fact let you listen. Here's what, and you know how we feel about this, and hopefully many of you agree. It's not good to be close to someone who is your vax opposite. You don't want to touch them. You understand how the physical issue is quite real, and grabbing a grocery cart shopping handle is one of the dumbest things you can do, unless you're wearing gloves, and even then. But still, the idea of being within exhalation range of anybody or touching range is an issue you need to weigh. You need to consider it. Here's Dr. Mark Siegel telling us all how we need to hug and touch everybody. Okay? Everybody.
It's enormously important. The pandemic made it much worse with all the lockdowns and shutdowns and closures, with people on social media not talking to each other. You know that there's a study that shows that if you just hug somebody for 20 seconds, you decrease your risk of heart disease and your blood pressure goes down. So my message for the holidays is, let's hug. instead of yelling at each other. Let's listen to people who don't agree with us, but then let's come together and show kindness and hugging. Kindness lowers blood pressure.
Dr. Siegel, great to see you. Have a great 2024.
Bye. Bye, Dr. Siegel. Thank you for that. I wonder how many people you're going to infest with spike proteins with that very nice sentimental view, but medically speaking, you don't want to do that. Those days are no longer with us, sad to say.
We've had many examples now, our friend Cindy being one of them, where she just gave a brief hug to her sister in this case, just a fleeting brush of the cheek, and it nailed her, absolutely nailed her for, a couple months?
I think it was several months.
Yeah, and she's not the only one. I have heard that story now several times.
How many shedding stories have you found and that we presented here? Countless.
Countless.
Too many.
Countless.
Too many to count. So it's a real issue, and it's sad that you can't hug your aunt, uncle, cousin, grandparent, whatever. You just don't want to do it unless you're all of the same vaxxed status, and then it isn't going to matter much. All right?
No, something, it could be lethal. Maybe it won't be, but we still don't know what is being transmitted. If it's the spike, I think it's at least that. But there may be some kind of toxic bacterial metabolites that are on these people's skin that can penetrate your skin and make you very, very sick.
Well, we know the spike is on skin, right? It's being disgorged that way.
Yeah.
So just understand that.
I think at some point, to get some clarification on this, we're just going to have to, have somebody, a laboratory that's willing to do skin swabs and then next-gen sequencing on it to find out what is in these people's, the epithelial cells of their skin or their secretions. And it can be done.
Right. How many, and as far as the act of sex is concerned, sex kills now. Sex will kill you.
Oh, that's not even, don't even consider it.
No. It's off the table. Unless you don't care or you're with someone else who's been, injected half a dozen times and you just don't care. But if you're relatively clean, i.e. not vaxxed, and you have relations with somebody who's vaxxed, you may be taking your life absolutely to the trash fairly soon. Sorry.
Not worth it.
That's just the truth. No, it's not. All right. Now, there's another aspect to this. There's so many angles, and that's been the big story from the beginning. So many different ways that this bioweapon can kill. Not overnight, necessarily, not the next day, but a year, 2 years. We kind of think there's a 2 to 5 year window now. We'll see how this plays out. From being injected to showing up with catastrophic illnesses. And we're talking about prion brain death all the way down to kidney failure, to heart disease, heart attacks. Heart just stops. The heart just stops. Now, we've talked about this, we've explained this, and it's not getting any better. There are a number of things, at least half a dozen different pathways that the injection will set up mechanisms that will kill your heart. Okay? We're going to talk about one of those tonight. I'm going to listen to a little bit from Dr. Philip McMillan in a couple of minutes, but I made just a brief list. You've got the inflammatory triplets, myocarditis, pericarditis, endocarditis, itis, as in infectivity or infectious profile, as in inflamed. Inflammation of the heart, inflammation of the brain. Why do you think most people have pain in their heart all the time who are complaining about such or have headaches all the time? Inflammation is a factor, I would suggest, in both of those profiles, if not many more. Inflammation as Eric has been saying for a long time now, is not what you want in your body. It's not your friend. So we've got number one, the carditis triplets. All right? There's one. Anything to add to that?
Well, there's other theories, too, as to why people are dying suddenly.
I have that coming up.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to see if you had anything else about the carditis triplets.
No.
You may not have any symptoms. Doesn't mean you don't have it. And even McCullough is saying that apparently everyone who's gotten injected has myocarditis to one degree or another. All right. Number two, the body's biologically electric signal to cause the heart to beat comes from the autonomic nervous system, of course. And the spike, as you heard from Dr. Nagase, has a very, very definite way of ruining and interrupting and causing the shutdown of the autonomic system signaling to your heart to beat. Tell us more.
Well, yeah. So there could be interruptions in the signaling that tells the heart to beat. That's certainly valid, you know, due to the inflammation and the spike, just the presence of the spike is disrupting.
It gets in the neurology of the autonomic system and causes inflammation, and it brings in the lymphocytes, which are there to destroy the cells that have been compromised by the spike. So they shut down, they actually shut down the mechanism of transport of this signal. That's part of it.
Good, yes.
All right, the spike protein in the arteries, in the heart muscle itself, again, cause scarring and destruction. Not the autonomic nervous system. Now we're moving to the heart muscle itself. We've shown you slides from Dr. Burkhardt, which make it quite clear that the T lymphocytes dyed blue. Well, it's not the whole lymphocyte. It's actually just the nucleus of the lymphocyte, but it shows it all aggregating around a spike-heavy area of heart cells. And it destroys the heart cells, which aren't replaced, and leaves scar tissue. So there's another one. That's number three. So those beautifully long striated heart muscles, which are actually beating in like a wave, no longer can beat properly. The heart is now victimized by scar tissue, by interruptions and all manner of problems with the autonomic system. So the heart will just stop. And above all, the heart, compromised as it is having to pump sludge blood, not liquid blood. It's sludge, and the heart cannot do it for time.
That's right. That a lot of people have this pulmonary hypertension, which puts a tremendous strain on the right side of the heart, and it can enlarge and then eventually become weak.
It does. It just fades away.
And that's
another
when you
one.
See the bloating. You know, you have, you know, fluid retention in the lower extremities.
Right.
And sometimes if it's the right side of the heart, that's when you see the belly start to swell.
Stomach?
Yeah.
Huh. I've seen, remember all those people out there with the great big bellies? And they say, I'm still the same waist size as I was in high school. But you look up above that belt and you see, 2 feet of extended abdomen. So anyway, another one real quick, the ion channels are being blocked. So the heart has big trouble
there. Yeah, there could be imbalances in the sodium and chloride, potassium, magnesium. Those are all ions that are required to have the heart beat, to conduct electricity. And a lot of times there are issues with the sodium balance.
Mm-hmm.
So that can have, rather significant effects on a nerve.
And then just to repeat about the sludge blood wearing out the heart. The heart's not designed to do that. I don't even know how it does as much as it does with that blood. And who has sludge blood? most everyone who's been vaxxed. That's a sad yep. state of affairs. I got six things here. The last one is lack of NAD, which nobody seems to want to talk about much. It's not a pop and sizzle term. NAD. And you become NAD deficient, and your entire biophysical machine suffers.
That's right. And when you have a situation where there's low oxygen and not enough ATP or NAD to create ATP, you've got a real problem. And so what happens is you can deplete the substrate, the purines that you need to create ATP, and you're running off of ADP. Over time, you can end up depleting the NAD that's needed to create ATP. And when that happens, it's instant death for that cell. So if that's happening in a group of cells or, I don't know, one cell at a time, it's bad enough. So you're going to get cells that are dying in the heart. But that can be a cause of sudden death, just depletion of NAD in the heart muscle.
Right. All right. So that's just a little quick survey of six pathways of death, heart death, caused by this injection and or the bioweapon virus itself. Now, they're talking about this JN1 variant now, and they're trying to say, oh, watch out, the JN1 variant's going to cause an avalanche of heart deaths, of heart attacks, heart failure. No, they just kind of come up with a new label, because I think they're expecting a lot of heart deaths this year, and I think that'll be a convenient thing to hang them on. They're going to blame JN.1 as a variant for it. Here's Dr. Philip McMillan talking about physiology in the vaccinated heart. And I would hasten to suggest that the vaccinated or shed upon heart might be almost equally at risk here. But here's Dr. McMillan.
What I think I am annoyed about, and this is why I'm talking about it today, is the headline here. And this headline here, this is from GB News. As I said here, COVID scientists issue a warning, new variant could cause global heart failure pandemic. And so this was actually done, published on the 29th of December, 2023. And so they're concerned that there's a new strain of COVID which could potentially cause heart issues. And they're looking at this JN1, which Gert and I were talking about recently, global healthcare risks related to COVID-19. And so that caught my attention. And I don't like it when people try and hide the reality, especially in an environment where we need to understand stuff. This is not a time for politics. And this is the impression I got from this headline. This is about politics. I'll take you back to the article, which is in the description here. And you can see down here, Japan's top research institute, the RIKEN, has now issued a warning in the new report, which states that ACE2 receptors, I've always talked about ACE2 autoimmunity in severe COVID-19, which the coronavirus clings to within the human cells, is very common in the heart. And this means many people who catch the virus may suffer from reduced cardiac function. Now, it's not that that is completely untrue, but it is not the main issue. It is only a part of the issue. And we have a much more serious issue going on in the background, which really, really needs to be addressed. Now, sadly, as I said, there is no pleasure in saying that I predicted this in March of 2023. The link is there if you want to see the link in the description to this video. Heart failure epidemic has over 280,000 views. I predicted that in March 2023. I knew it was going to happen because the science connected. Now, the problem is that because there was no acknowledgement of the science at that point, it now means that the heart failure epidemic is now starting to appear, and suddenly they're coming up with reasons that are related to JN1. Now, JN1 will be a contributor, but it's not going to be the primary mechanism as to what is going on. So this leads us now to the paper that I wanted to make reference to. Now, again, I can't go into too much detail, so there are only a few points that I am highlighting. And if you want to hear me go into more detail on it, please register for the webinar at the link below. So essentially, this paper here is about the assessment of myocardial FDG uptake at PET scans in asymptomatic SARS-CoV-2 vaccinated and non-vaccinated patients. And
okay, where he's going with this has to do with sugars, uptake of sugars by the heart, and how the heart gets its energy from sugar, from protein, etc. Anything you want to add here to make this more accessible?
Yeah, so bear in mind that the heart prefers to run on fat rather than sugar. It can run on both, but it would prefer, it's more efficient when it can burn fat. And in order to burn fat, you need oxygen. So this study that they did, it was with people that were undergoing a PET scan for cancer, and they decided, well, let's just, since we have these people, you know, being injected with a dye to look at, to see if they have cancer metastases, because cancer cells uptake glucose or sugar because they run on, well, they run on sugar. They don't use oxygen. So they decided to look at, well, let's just see what their hearts are like, vaxxed versus unvaxxed. And it's really shocking what they discovered.
All right, very good. Here we go.
This is proper science, meaning that they just asked the question, really. That's what those researchers were doing. They were just asking questions and reflecting on the outcomes of what they were seeing. And it's just simply because they had the opportunity to do this research. They're already doing PET scans on patients. And so the background, this is a Japanese study, and you can see it here. This is the full study here. So it's a Japanese study, a radiological study, because they're already doing this work. And so they knew that patients who develop myocarditis or after SARS-CoV-2 vaccination show abnormalities on cardiac MRI scans. So what they were interested in is whether or not some of those changes occur in asymptomatic patients who were vaccinated. Now, that is a perfect scientific question. That's the kind of question that we should have been asking very, very early on, once there started to be evidence of issues around myocarditis. Because myocarditis, inflammation of the heart muscle, doesn't necessarily present with symptoms. Subclinical myocarditis can be very, very nonspecific, very difficult to identify. And so when we spoke about people who had myocarditis, that was overt clinical myocarditis. What happens to the cohort who had much more subtle symptoms? Are they affected and what percentage? So this is what this was looking at. So this study here, bring this back up again. So this is, again, as I said, I'm doing a quick summary of it. And if you want to see the full analysis, you have to join on the webinar. But what they were doing is that they wanted to assess the fluorodeoxyglucose uptake on PET scans in asymptomatic patients vaccinated against SARS-CoV-2.
Fluorodeoxyglucose uptake by the heart. Now, from the word glucose, you can probably figure out that that's not fat, that's sugar. So this is where this is going, and I'll give you a little teaser to the punchline. The heart is no longer acting normally and rationally in terms of its energy uptake, where it's getting it, and what it's doing with it. And this has to do with everybody who's received the biological weapon. Does it have to do with everyone who's had the viral biological weapon? Maybe. Does it have anything to do with everyone who's been shedded upon copiously or otherwise? Maybe. In other words, the heart is not acting normally after being exposed to the vax, the injection, or shedding. That's probably the larger overview I can give you right now. So anything else?
Well, I would just say that the vaxxed cohort in this study, and there were 700 vaxxed and 300 who were unvaxxed, the vaxxed people had at least two injections, and they were, I think, 180 days out, so about 6 months out from the second vaccine. There was no clarification whether or not the unvaxxed had the virus or not. lightning flu, so we don't know.
All right. Here we go.
And just so that you understand, a PET scan, a very important test, we usually use it primarily for cancer, and that's what they were using it for in those cases. But all they do is they take a glucose, and it's fluorodeoxyglucose, which is labeled. It has a specific mark on it. You can imagine it as a light, and that's what emits the positrons so that it can be picked up in a scan. The reason it's important in cancer is simple. When you inject it into the bloodstream, and it's then injected just before the scan, areas that use a lot of glucose will concentrate this marker in them. And so if there is cancer, cancer cells tend to use high levels of glucose because they don't tend to use the mitochondria. And so you will find that if there is a cancer, it can light up with a PET scan. So it's a perfectly valuable, important kind of test. And so all they did is that they were just reflecting on the fact that we're doing this test anyway. Why don't we look at the cohort of people who are unvaccinated and vaccinated and see what happens? What were the outcomes? So that's essentially all they did. They took 300 non-vaccinated patients, okay, average age of 52.9 years, and 700 vaccinated patients, average age of 56.8 years, and then they looked at the outcomes from the scans. So it was a retrospective study, meaning that they had already done this investigation. And they were just looking back afterwards to say, okay, well, we've got this information here. Let's see if we can differentiate between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated in terms of what happens with the heart. I'm telling you, this is science. This is what we should be doing all the time. It's trying to understand what are the implications longer term of vaccination. Why would you not want to know? And I tell you, you know, this is the mistake that is happening in the scientific community. There is too much politics to not ask these really simple yet critical questions. So essentially, what they found, and again, I'll be covering this in more detail in the webinar, but essentially what they found when compared with non-vaccinated patients, okay, so it's non-vaccinated versus vaccinated, asymptomatic patients, so none of them had myocarditis or any symptoms, after their second dose, up to 180 days, they showed increased myocardial FDG uptake. This is the labeled glucose on the PET scans. And it's difficult to go into all the details here now, but I'm just giving you a snippet of why this is so, so important. So it's all down to cardiac physiology. And this is why I said I took some time to reflect very carefully on what this meant. So it was published in September. A lot of people spoke about it, but I had to sit down and really reflect, what does it mean that there is increased glucose uptake? Now, some people may say, well, it doesn't matter too much, but this is 180 days afterwards. They are finding that significant rise in glucose uptake. Well, that's not bad. What's the problem with glucose? Okay, this is the bit that we'll go into in much more detail in the webinar, but I'll give you a taste, a snippet of it here. When we talk about heart muscle primarily uses free fatty acids or fat. 60 to 90% of its usage is that. Compared to carbohydrates, which is glucose, 10 to 40%. So there's a bit of an overlap where you can have more carbohydrate usage. But the primary energy source for the heart is fat. And there's an important reason for that. And this is why I said that understanding the implications of what we're seeing is really, really important. All I'll show you at the moment is an energy comparison so that you can grasp the significance of it.
Uncover this bathroom sink hack, which has helped thousands of men to eliminate...
Hold on. All right.
Kilojoules per gram that are produced between 1 gram of fat versus carbohydrate versus protein. So you have it here labeled A, B, and C. This is fat. This is carbohydrate. This is protein. For free fatty acids or fat, because it's broken down completely in mitochondria, 1 gram produces 37 kilojoules compared to 16 with carbohydrates and 17 with protein. So when it comes to function of both brain and heart, this is by far the most efficient use of energy, free fatty acids, because it produces the most bang per buck. So when you reflect on the fact that you are seeing a transition where more carbohydrate is being used, it effectively means there is less energy for the heart. It's as simple as that. And so in the average person, you may not notice any difference because you're not stressing your heart. But in the context of someone who is putting their heart under stress, this could be very, very significant. And here is an image from the paper as to what they were showing. As you can see here, is that in terms of the uptake, wherever there's high uptake, it goes very dark. So this is the brain. This is a 43-year-old male who is not vaccinated. And this here is an 80-year-old male who is not vaccinated. High uptake in the brain. You can see down here, this here is the liver. This is the heart. This is the spleen. Down here are the kidneys. So you can...
Okay, I'm going to pause it there. We'll put this up under guests and so forth. The bottom line here is very simple. Something has changed the way the heart metabolizes for energy. And this could be a huge development. This is a very big alarm, and no one is really looking at it much yet. The PET scans show what he's talking about. They show the heart. It's reflecting black instead of just clear. It's obviously being changed. Something has changed among the vaxxed very, very significantly. So when you start messing with that, how the heart derives energy from the body, and it switches from fats to carbs, sugar, that's not a good sign.
That heart.
Yeah.
That heart has Warburg metabolism, meaning, it's like it's behaving like a tumor.
Yeah.
And that's why it's showing up on a PET scan like a tumor. But, I mean, any organ that has, is typically running on glucose like the brain is going to light up like that. But the heart should not be lighting up like that.
No. Nope.
And that's quite frightening. And these are people that didn't have any symptoms of myocarditis. Nothing.
None. No, exactly. So here's yet another pathway of trouble that's caused by the bioweapon and or the bioweapon virus, either one. This is not good. This is so destructive to the biophysiology in so many ways. It boggles the mind, and I'm not a scientist. I mean, I can't even believe what I'm hearing and seeing. So this is a new development. They're going to try to blame it on the new JN1 variant, but don't buy that. This has apparently been going on for a long time. Now they've done some real good science and figured it out by looking at older PET scans.
Well, again, I think, it offers a possible explanation of sudden death where...
Yes, it does.
You know, if the NAD is being depleted, the heart is a high-energy organ. It needs ATP to function. And if it's losing it because it can't run, it can't make the ATP because there's no NAD or oxygen, very inefficient at metabolism, then it just stops. I mean, no NAD equals death.
Yes,
and
it
looks like the type of situation that it's setting up for that.
I'm afraid you're right. So, again, not good. All right, let's jump over to some of our human stories here. You've got some good ones here. I don't know. Let's look at children dying here. That's the third one down. Go ahead with that.
I've got to get there. Has anyone known of anyone, especially a child, that has had extreme and sudden vomiting, possibly death after? A family friend called today. The grandson's approximately 10 years old friend in a social setting started extreme virus-like vomiting. Parents took her to the ER where she suddenly died. Now the grandson has started the vomiting and is scared he is going to die. Parents took him to the ER immediately. I asked if there was any knowledge if the vax had been given. I was laughed at and made fun of. Side vent, I've had scoffing polite nods. Flat out refusals to listen. Never been made fun of before this. I cannot wait to be vindicated. So, my thought on that is, not knowing whether this child was vaxxed or not, if he's mingling with vaxxed, that may be all it takes. Because this, to me, sounds like something like toxic shock syndrome, where...
Interesting idea. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it comes on fast like that. And it's toxic shock syndrome is actually a bacterial infection in the blood caused by, I think, staph infection that gets into the blood, or strep, one of those two. But the body goes berserk when it detects this type of bacteria entering the bloodstream. And, you know, the most, I guess, newsworthy examples of this was back in the 1980s when these super absorbent tampons came out, and women were keeping them in place way longer than they should have, and it was collecting bacteria that migrated into their bloodstream, and some of them died. And they discovered that the source, the cause of the problem, was this type of bacteria. Now, the spike protein is known to attach to these endotoxins, they call them, lipopolysaccharides, that are associated with this type of bacteria, and once again cause the immune system to go berserk. And, you know, you could very quickly see a situation like this, and it could be fatal if it isn't managed.
It's staph and strep.
Right.
Both are involved.
Yes.
So this is a problem.
You know, they can be in the body. You know, the digestive tract does have some of these, and in some people, they have a lot of them, which is not good. But for whatever reason, they can get into the bloodstream and really wreak havoc, especially when the spike is involved. You know, it appears as though the spike was designed with this attachment point for these endotoxins or lipopolysaccharides, and to create exactly this type of situation.
Okay, next topic. Never-ending problems of the vaxxed. And maybe we should start including more of, we'll call them viral survivors, people who get over the virus. They really don't get over the virus, unfortunately, because it stays in the background for up to 2 years, creating more problems, and they're still watching it. So you may feel better, but it doesn't mean you've cleared that virus from your body. It doesn't mean that.
Right.
All right. I'm nearly 2 years into this crime against humanity. Friday night, I had a disturbing event occur, and wondering if someone has had the same experience. It started with a jolt that traveled in a line across my head to the other side. Immediately, I felt all tingly all over my body, especially up my spine. My blood pressure was elevated to the worst it has ever been, 188 over 105. My chest was beating so fast, my heart, I could see it pulsating through my T-shirt. Then my legs started shaking uncontrollably. My hands were all sweaty. The shaking in my legs continued for about 3 hours. The whole event was so frightening.
That's a vax-injured person.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, another one. It's been 26 months now with the problems from two punctures of Pfizer. My fibromyalgia is still uncontrolled at levels unassumable by the human mind, and I've been on the brink of suicide twice. I am on 100 micrograms of fentanyl to endure the pain and anti-inflammatories for systemic inflammation. I continue with neuropathic and anti-inflammatory medication, and I am steadily getting worse. I have started a new alternative treatment with ivermectin, and I noticed some improvement at the brain level, but it is still early to know if I can stagnate or improve the symptoms, because for now, chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia continue. In Spain, there is denial of our pathologies. Is it the same in your countries? And someone, this was actually written July of this past year, and someone asked for an update. How are you doing now? And she replies, I continue with ivermectin and reset CV3 3 weeks ago. I started with an integrative medicine doctor to improve the immune system, intestines, detoxification, etc. So it's an ongoing battle. Right.
Here's another one. This one has to do with myo and pericarditis after the COVID vax. The squeezing and stabbing heart pain is relentless. A year of colchicine gave me severe stomach issues, so now I can't take any other meds or supplements without worsening the stomach pain. I've tried. I really don't know how people tolerate this kind of pain. It's been months of this hell. ER and doctors don't know what to do. Can't even walk anymore. Nobody believes the pain is this bad. They think I'm exaggerating. I even thought about removing my stomach surgically so I can take the meds for my heart again. Just some relief, anyhow, anywhere. But the surgery is too risky. Wow. See? It's just horrible. And you see these people out and about. They get out, some of them, and they'll never tell you. You don't know.
Mm.
Go ahead, grab the next one. We can get that in here.
One reply here. Well, we believe you. You're not exaggerating. I have the same issue with everyone thinking I'm a hypochondriac because I look fine on the outside. Have you tried a short course of corticosteroids to treat the inflammation? It's the only thing that managed to get mine under control. I've got both myo and peri. I still have flares and all the other wonderful symptoms that come with this injury, but for the majority of the time, the pain level is a 3 out of 10 compared to how it was at the beginning. I hope you can get some relief soon. He replies, yes, I've tried prednisone, but no luck there. I'm no longer able to tolerate the meds that did help due to chronic stomach issues. It's awful knowing something out there helps, but I just can't take it. Even a single dose hurts my stomach like crazy. I even took a 15-month break to heal my stomach, and as soon as I started the meds, the same stomach pain came back and kept getting worse. It is hellish.
Yeah, well, we have a lot more. Maybe Wednesday we'll try and get caught up on some of these. One thing we haven't talked all that much about is pain and loneliness together. These so many people. We're talking 275 million Americans have been injected with this horror. And so many of them are suffering in agony. And they are lonely in their suffering because many won't listen to them. Go ahead.
I think it was, you know, palpable this holiday season. I mean, it was a distinct lack of holiday cheer, I would say.
I think you're right. I don't know. I would expect it. I mean, after all the research we've done and presented here, that's what you'd expect, a diminution of Hollywood Halloween cheer. Hollywood holiday, from Halloween on, it just wasn't there. It wasn't there.
No.
And I mention Hollywood because if you look at the Hollywood Christmas movies, for example, not the Halloween movies, but they always do... At least they used to try to hearken back to the way it was. And so many younger people now really haven't experienced that. In a few more years of this, it's going to be not even a memory for a lot of people. That's the sad part. It's crazy.
Very true.
So from Halloween to New Year's, it just wasn't what it used to be. Thank you, my friend. Great job, as always. And
thank you,
talk
Jeff.
To you soon.
Right. Okay, Happy New Year. Good night.
Be right back with Hour 3 for all of you in just a couple minutes. Hold on.